This is an iHeart podcast.
RFK Jr. had a spicy confirmation hearing today. We'll talk about that tonight. Liz Wheeler joins us. Chip Roy joins us. What a show on I'm Right. RFK had a spicy confirmation hearing today, and I'm going to get to that here in just a minute with the questions and the screaming and the questioning and everything else. But let's just do a little analogy first, because what we're seeing right now on a macro level, in this goes beyond America, in Western civilization, what we're seeing right now is people looking for a place to trust. Looking for institutions to trust because their old ones violated the trust. So we'll do a little analogy this way. I want you to picture you live in a small town, small, very remote town, pretty small place. And in this town, there is one car dealership, only one. And it's owned by a local family. And they really have sold all the cars to the people in that town for the longest time. It's the local one, it's owned by a family, it's good, that everyone can trust them, it's good to go. And 100 miles away, there's a big city with all kinds of dealerships, bad reputation. And so forever, decade after decade after decade, your dad, his dad, everybody goes to the same local car dealership. But something begins to happen with the local dealership. Gets bought out, new family, next generation, pick your whatever. They start ripping people off. Start selling lemons, not making it right, scamming people out of money, screwing them on interest rates. Year after year after year, the local car dealership starts doing people wrong and taking all that trust that had been built up for decades and just throwing it away. And so what will happen eventually, and it's inevitable, eventually the people in that town, they'll start making the drive 100 miles away to the big city. They're going to go start shopping somewhere else. And when that happens, the people who work at the local dealership, and maybe some who've been in the town a long time, you know, their dad bought a car there, their dad, they'll start yelling about it. Why are you driving? You can't go support the big city. Don't you realize that the scam artists over there in the big city? Why are you doing it? I don't understand. But here's the truth. Once trust has been violated, once credibility has been lost, people will move on. It is inevitable. And you may love or you may hate whatever they move on to. Who knows where they'll land? Who knows where they're going to take their car dealership money? Who knows where they're going to take it? Maybe it'll be good. Maybe it'll be a disaster. I don't know. But what I do know is the reason they're taking it anywhere else, the reason they're making the drive to the big city, is because they were screwed over time and time again by the local dealership. And so their car money is now going elsewhere. And if you're upset that the car money is going elsewhere, well, there's only one place to look if you're looking to place blame. It's the local dealership. RFK Jr. has some ideas that are many mainstream, many way outside of the mainstream. And we'll get to a lot of his testimony today. And I'm not saying I'm a RFK Jr. super fan or anything like that. I most definitely am not. I'm really don't really care about him at all, to be honest with you. So I don't really care either way. And I'm not really taking a stance on a lot of his stances. But what I am saying, my message to everybody right now is, if the appeal of RFK Jr. confuses you, well, allow me to walk you down memory lane.
You really should, in an indoor setting, a congregate setting, be wearing masks. It's just the appropriate thing to do to defend, to protect yourself and your family.
Our data from the CDC today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick.
Ivermectin is something more often used to deworm horses.
If we really do our part, stay at home, social distance, then we can flatten our curve even below those projections. But it really depends on all of us.
I'm making the personal sacrifices not to infect my parents and my pregnant daughter. I worry about that because then it gives people the option to say, well, if bars and restaurants are open, then I can have 20 people over for Thanksgiving. And so I don't like it to be any number. I like it to be keep it to your immediate household.
That was a, what, 1 minute long montage? And no, I'm not going to try to do an entire COVID revisionist thing, but remember the talk we had? If you were watching I'm Right back then, you remember it like it was yesterday. The talk we had so many times, it was practically a nightly show on this network, where I would tell you, you only have so much credibility. You're giving away the last of it. You are sacrificing the remaining trust left in your institution. And once that trust is gone, well, this will go beyond COVID. I talked all the time about what it meant for our nation as a whole for all these institutions to violate our trust. Let me ask you something. Are you hesitant about RFK? Fine, that's fine. Are you critical? Totally fine. You have your opinion about anybody you want. I don't really care. If you are critical about RFK, whack job, nut, all these other things you want to say, fine, whatever. Maybe he is. What were you saying about COVID? And don't act like it's a separate issue, because it is most definitely not a separate issue. How did you handle your management duties at the local car dealership? Because if yesterday you were all, wear a mask, get your 18th booster shot, oh my gosh, everyone should be fired, close the schools. And now today, you're saying, this RFK guy is a nut. Why is anybody listening to him? Well, you are why people are listening to him. You. If you were one of those nutballs who destroyed the trust in the medical institutions in this country, you created the environment for RFK Jr. to come in. Now, let's talk about that trust, because RFK Jr. said a lot of things today. And of course, there was a lot of screaming and yelling from senators and all those things. I get all that. But the most important thing RFK Jr. said today during the confirmation hearing was when he sat down and he did this. He discussed what it will take to earn back that trust. That's the most critical thing. Our institutions becoming trustworthy again and earning back that trust. And when RFK sat down and talked about opening up the books, that's how it's done.
My approach, HHS, I said before, Senator, is radical transparency. Democrats and Republicans ought to be able to come in and get information that was generated at taxpayer expense that is owned by the American taxpayer. They shouldn't get redacted documents. Public health agencies should be transparent. And if we want Americans to restore trust in the public health agencies, we need transparency.
Will you commit not to fire anyone in the health arena who currently works on protecting Americans from cyber attacks in their healthcare files?
I will commit to not firing anybody who's doing their job.
Based on your opinion, or your political agenda, or Mr. Trump's political agenda?
Based upon my opinion.
So I guess that means a lot of the folks who've had any type of views on vaccines will be out of work.
For everything else that was said today, that was the most important thing. It's what you've heard me scream about on the television for how long? Trust is sometimes impossible to earn back, but it's very, very hard to earn it back. And there's only one way you can earn it back. Only one way. And up to this point, it's been the one thing the system refuses to do. Open the books. Transparency. No more lies. No more, changing the subject. No more accusations. No. Trust has been lost in our institutions, including our medical institutions. If you want me, you, the rest of us, to trust again. We will not be lectured into it. We will not be lied into it, manipulated into it. You will open up your books, government, and you will show us the things you have done. And then maybe we can start talking about earning trust back again. I mean, the pharmaceutical industry alone. Did you hear this exchange with Elizabeth Warren today?
You're not going to take money from drug companies in any way, shape, or form.
Who? Me?
Yes, you.
Oh. I'm happy to commit to that.
Okay, good. That's what I figured. I said it's an easy question to start with. And I think you're right on this question.
I don't think any of them want to give me money, by the way.
Will you also agree that you won't take any compensation from any lawsuits against drug companies while you are secretary and for 4 years afterwards?
Well, I'll certainly commit to that while I'm secretary. But I do want to clarify something because you're making me sound like a shill.
It's just a really simple question.
Yeah,
you've taken in $2.5 million. I want to know if you will commit right now that not only will you not go to work for drug companies, you won't go to work suing the drug companies and taking your rake out of that while you're a secretary and for 4 years after. It's just...
I'll commit to not taking any fees from drug companies while I'm secretary.
No, I'm asking about fees from suing drug companies. Will you agree not to do that?
You're asking me to not sue drug companies.
No,
and I'm not going to agree to that,
Senator.
You can
sue drug companies as much as you...
Why would Elizabeth Warren choose that line of questioning? Well, people have been digging into it today. It's pretty open, you know, campaign donations are open. You know how many millions of dollars Elizabeth Warren has taken from the medical institutions of this country to keep her campaign coffers full? See, if you're upset about RFK Jr., maybe you're happy about RFK Jr., it doesn't really matter, but the important thing is that you understand the appeal of somebody like RFK Jr. Why is there that appeal? Why are people driving 100 miles now to shop at a new car dealership? It's because the local dealership took all those years of trust and tossed it in the wastebasket. And now people are looking for something else. Human beings are designed, we are created. We will put our trust somewhere. If you violate it, we will take it back and we'll drive to the big city. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, speaking of putting horrible things in your body, what do you take to sleep when it's time to sleep? You ever taken something to sleep and then you wake up the next morning and feel tired still? Groggy? Sleep like 15 hours, you still can hardly wake up? It's probably not something you should be taking. The reason I love Dream Powder from Beam isn't just because it's natural. It's because I wake up in the morning and I feel good, rested, every single day. I don't feel groggy and heavy and miserable. It's a cup of hot chocolate with melatonin and things like that in it. You want to sleep like a baby without putting horrible things in your body? Up to 40% off at shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
I'll comply with all the ethical guidelines.
That's not the question. You and I, you have said
you're asking me, Senator, you're asking me not to sue vaccine pharmaceutical companies. Yeah, you are. That's exactly what you're doing.
Look, no one should be fooled here. As Secretary of HHS, Robert Kennedy will have the power to undercut vaccines and vaccine manufacturing across our country. Kids might die, but Robert Kennedy can keep cashing in.
Senator, I support vaccines. I support the childhood schedule.
It was a wild day today. I can't wait to hear what Liz has to say about all this nonsense. Joining me now, host of the Great Liz Wheeler Show and noted health freak, Liz Wheeler. Okay, Liz, I can't wait to hear your thoughts. Oh, yeah, by the way, she wrote a great book called Hide Your Children, which I would recommend. My wife loved that book. Liz, okay, what was going through your head today? I know you're a weird vegan type, as you watched RFK Jr. take on these senators.
I did. I have so much energy for the show because I drank my 60 ounces of spinach shake for breakfast this morning, so I'm raring to go today, Jesse. God. You are welcome. Elizabeth Warren, can't you just picture Elizabeth Warren, though, as a four-year-old, like, kicking and screaming in the grocery store, her arms and legs on the floor, being like, no, I will not give back the nickel I took, Daddy. She is, I think, the most obnoxious senator. Listen, the entire U.S. Senate, if this has not been clear before, it was made crystal clear today, and I think that might be the biggest takeaway from the hearing. The United States Senate is the most intolerable place on earth. It is filled to the brim with self-serving, self-obsessed, slimy, snobby, elitist senators who crave the sound of their own voices. They had the opportunity to ask Robert F. Kennedy Jr. anything they wanted in the world, anything. And the majority of them chose to just listen to their own list of people that they know and things that they care about and the state that they're from. It was so obnoxious and so crystal clear that every single person in that esteemed body is bought off by Big Pharma. They didn't give Bobby a chance to answer because they don't want to know the answer. They don't want to know the truth. They don't want to know the reality of what's happened to you and your children after vaccines, your autoimmune disorders, your infertility struggles, your cancer, your obesity, your diabetes. They don't care. They don't care about you at all. All they care is about filling their pockets with Big Pharma and big food money. And that was the biggest takeaway from the hearing today.
Liz, first of all, we'll actually come back to the vaccines and the health stuff. It amazes me that Democrats still let Elizabeth Warren lead really on anything because everyone hates feminists. Even other feminists hate feminists. The bug-eyed, crew-cut, nasty, loud woman is not appealing to anybody on this planet. And yet they let this woman take over these Senate hearings all the time for a party that has a branding problem. I'd call that a mistake.
Well, the weirdest part to me is, well, first of all, ironic that this was in the Senate Finance Committee. I have no idea why the HH secretary was in the Senate Finance Committee, but ironic because of all the Big Pharma money that's bought off these people. But it's weird to me that the Democrats let Elizabeth Warren play such a prominent role in their party because she has a recipe in a cookbook called Pow Wow Chow. What happened to cultural appropriation? What happened about lying about being a minority? How could you possibly let this white woman try to steal your identity and your legacy and your victimhood? And yet they just conveniently ignore that when it's Elizabeth Warren.
I'd almost forgotten about Pow Wow Chow. Gosh, that friggin' murders me. Okay, back to the things RFK said today and the things the senators said today. What do we do about this confirmation process, Liz? I understand it's constitutional, and I'm not all about kings and things like that. But as you pointed out, it's just one big fundraising effort where they get on television and they scramble and scream and they try to get the emails prepped out. Send $50 to help Elizabeth Warren. And it's awful. And honestly, it makes the country look awful. The whole thing kind of is gross, isn't it?
I don't think the process is the problem. I think the people are the problem. It's not the idea of subjecting cabinet level nominees to questioning by senators is a good idea. There's a transparency to that that I like. My problem is with these senators. I mean, it's incumbent on you today to pick up your phone and call your U.S. senator. They're there to represent you and tell them in no uncertain terms that to vote yes on confirming RFK Jr. to HHS secretary. And you make it very clear, you know, tell them to walk down to the office door of Senator Joni Ernst and ask her how it felt. Ask her how it felt after she threatened to torpedo Pete Hegseth. Ask her how it felt when the wrath of MEGA was unleashed on her. And she felt for the first time that Big Pharma money, or in this case, the military industrial complex money, wasn't the most powerful currency, that she was actually in danger of losing her power, her seat in the U.S. Senate. You ask her how that felt. And then you, as a United States senator, you sit there and you think about the fact that that's going to be you. That what President Trump did to the Colombian president is going to be child's play compared to what's going to happen if Republican senators defy President Trump on his choice of who to lead HHS. Your political career will be destroyed if you vote against it. It's incumbent on us, Jesse, you and me and everybody watching this show, to make that very clear to the United States Senate, because the only thing they care about more than money is their own power and narcissism, hearing their own voices echoing in the U.S. Senate.
100% true. As I've told you all many times, these are not leaders. They're mostly gutless, coward losers, and you have to bullwhip them to get them to do what you want them to do, so they're never going to have the guts to actually do any of these things themselves. Okay, back to the opposition to RFK. You covered on your show that Mike Pence is leading the charge against him. What?
Yeah, I don't know if I would call it leading the charge, but he certainly considers himself to be a prominent voice, and his political group, that's what he does now that he's been demoted from vice president. He's leading a group called Advancing American Freedom, and this group spent six figures on an ad blitz, an ad campaign targeting some of the Republican senators that are kind of squishy on RFK's confirmation process. And Pence is trying to convince them to vote no. Ostensibly, Pence claims because RFK Jr. is pro-abortion. Pence, of course, styles himself as being pro-life, although I don't know how pro-life he actually is, which is despicable. It's despicable for a couple of reasons. First of all, Bobby Kennedy has promised to do whatever Trump wants to do when it comes to abortion and issues of life when Bobby is HHS secretary. Bobby's also on. You can see this. You know, he used to be very vocally supportive of abortion through the 9th month of pregnancy, and he's not anymore. Just like he changed his opinion on Trump, he used to despise Trump, and then he realized that Trump is one of the greatest leaders that our country has ever known. His mind is changing. You know, we should be gracious to people who are actually listening to us, who we're persuading. This is what we want people to do. We should have a little trust in President Trump that Bobby will be pro-life at HHS. But also, you have to remember, when Mike Pence claims that he cares about whether RFK Jr. is pro-life, that's not what it's about. Mike Pence's group, Advancing American Freedom, gets money from Big Pharma. They're just using Mike Pence as a stooge. He's a Big Pharma shill, just like the rest of them. And he doesn't care about abortion. He doesn't care about whether RFK is pro-life. He's just trying to wreck him because he doesn't like RFK actually looking at vaccine safety, because that would hinder the profits of the vaccine manufacturers.
That sounds about right. All right, finally, Liz. Tulsi Gabbard. Look, I'm worried about RFK getting through. I'm worried about Tulsi getting through. I think you're right. I think maybe these senators will be intimidated enough by us that they'll feel obligated. But when I see Tom Tillis planting damaging stories about Pete Hegseth in the Wall Street Journal right before that nutless loser went and voted yes himself, it tells me there's a lot of opposition in the GOP Senate.
Yeah, there is. I mean, I don't know that these people, these even Republican senators, are on our side. I think, though, that there's been this tidal shift in the conservative movement, meaning you and I and those watching, because we realize that we have a role to play in this administration that's very different than any role we've ever played in government before, that we are not only as important, but actually more important than our representatives in Congress, and that they are obligated to do what we want them to do. And we have just embraced this role of being the loud voice, the boss. And that's what we are. We're the boss of these United States senators, telling them, you will vote to drain the swamp. You will vote to put Tulsi Gabbard in the position as DNI, because she was labeled as a terrorist because she dared to criticize the intel community. Make these senators fear for their political position. Make them understand that they will be relegated to nothingness in the world of politics if they defy President Trump's choice for Tulsi Gabbard as DNI. And let me tell you, Jesse, this works. We've not only taken back control of media narrative on important issues, debunking lies and propaganda coming from the mainstream media aimed at Trump or Elon Musk, for example, you know, the Nazi salute, we took that down like that. We've also taken control of our representatives in the United States Congress. If we just stay vigilant and pick up the phone and send that email and tag our senator on X, it works.
Listen to Liz Wheeler. Go bully your local GOPer today. Liz, thank you so much. I appreciate you. All right. Cash Patel, that confirmation hearing is coming. We have a couple FBI whistleblowers joining us in a moment. Before we get to them, I want to switch up your cell phone service. No, I'm not a technician or something like that. It's just we have to stop funding these companies who hate us. We have to be purposeful with where we spend and don't spend our money. We have to put our money where our morals are. Believe me, you don't share morals with AT&T, T-Mobile, or Verizon. These companies hate you, they hate the things you care about, and we pay them to do the damage they do. That's wild. especially when we don't have to, because Pure Talk is there. They're on the same 5G network, so you're not going to be dropping calls. Oh, my gosh, no, Pure Talk's on the same network. I pay half of what I used to pay. Pure Talk loves this country. Their CEO fought for this country in the jungles of Vietnam. They hire Americans. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. Go switch. Takes 5-10 minutes. Switch. We'll be back. Well, it's confirmation hearing. I shouldn't say week. It's been a couple weeks of this now, but we have a big one coming up, and that would be Kash Patel, because his job is going to be to go clean out the Cheka. Joining me now, two men who are much more familiar with what goes on inside the Hoover building than I am, brave whistleblowers Steve Friend and Garrett O'Boyle. Okay, first of all, Garrett, Dick Durbin came out, and surprise, surprise, he's lying about something, talking about Kash Patel breaking protocol on some, what is all this?
Well, from my view, and I think from the legal view, Jesse, it's just a lot of baloney, because 5 U.S.C. 2303 is the federal law that governs whistleblowing in the FBI. And from a legal perspective, you have to have a reasonable belief that there's a violation of any law, rule, or regulation, an abuse of authority, gross mismanagement, a clear and significant danger to public health. Nowhere in that law does it mention some anonymous allegation that protocol was violated. So, you know, if this is all they have, it's really nothing, at least from a legal perspective, in my view. And I think they're just surviving on fumes at this point.
Steve, let's talk about the smear campaigns. I would expect that there will be more, and they will be extra vicious, given how instrumental the FBI has become in protecting the worst people in this country. But Kash looks pretty clean. I mean, so far, like Garrett just pointed out, if this is the best they've got, I mean, how do you stop him?
I don't think you can at this point. I mean, his credentials are impeccable. It's everything that you'd want to have from somebody at the helm of the Cheka to actually make the demolition that you and I have argued for into a renovation. The guy comes from a background not just as a prosecutor, but also as a defense attorney, which is really significant. He has a healthy appreciation for the power that the federal government brings to bear against defendants. Also worked into the intelligence space and the national security space. So all these things bode well for his favor. Plus, I think that it is laughable that you have members of the left who are going to stand in the way against the first person of color going to take over at the FBI. I think that any sort of tact that they take with him will only make him look more appealing, maybe even trying to make him look political. Well, look, at least he wears his politics on his sleeve, unlike Christopher Wray and James Comey. Chris Wray, who ran the scheme that the FBI had in order to influence the 2020 presidential election to censor the Hunter Biden laptop. Then you had James Comey, oversaw Crossfire Hurricane, also had a honeypot operation into Donald Trump's campaign in 2016. At least we know where we stand with Kash, and that's somebody who has a track record of actually going in and exposing the corruption at the FBI.
Honeypot, that's stuff you only see in movies. Garrett, did you ever take part in any honeypot stuff? Although I don't think you would do that well, to be frank.
No, sir. Can't say that I did. And I think another interesting aspect of this is you got CBS, I think, was the first outlet I saw who reported this quote-unquote whistleblower. And I find it interesting that suddenly they're interested in FBI whistleblowers. I've been suspended for just a little over 29 months now. Steve and I both got suspended at the same time. I'm still holding on. I'm technically an FBI employee still. And yet CBS has never reached out, never said, hey, you're an FBI whistleblower. What do you guys have to say? And so it just is no surprise, but at the same time should be shocking to people that suddenly the legacy media is interested in whistleblowers and labeling them whistleblowers without any type of legal vetting. And it's especially funny because when Steve and I testified, goodness, this was May of 2023, so quite a while ago now, Debbie Wasserman Schultz came out and straight up said, these are not whistleblowers. But again, if you go back to the legal outline that I laid out from our federal statutes, it's pretty clear that we had reasonable belief of an allegation of some type of wrongdoing like that. And even in fairness, let's say this person isn't a whistleblower. Okay, They still have a right under 5 U.S.C. 7211 to contact members of Congress, but to conflate the issue of some alleged violation of a protocol issue is vastly different than an allegation that a law is being broken. And furthermore, this this hostage fusion cell or whatever it was called from the FBI that this person allegedly is whistleblowing from, they may have different protocols than the CIA or the State Department or DOD, all facets of our government that's involved in some type of hostage negotiation and release.
Steve, I'm a little bit frustrated, to put it mildly, that Pam Bondi has still not been confirmed. Leave it to the low-T GOP to take the most important position and kick it down the road to last. And I'm concerned because I understand what's probably taking place inside the walls of the DOJ and the FBI as we wait for Kash Patel. These people are preparing, aren't they, Steve?
100% they are. And it's interesting they use the term inside the walls. Like earlier today, I got a photograph from the FBI Academy where they were painting over on the walls of the core value that the FBI purports to hold, where they put diversity ahead of rigorous obedience to the Constitution. And so in anticipation of Kash Patel coming in. And look, this is completely on the shoulders of the low-T GOP at this point. They hold the power to actually confirm these nominees, and yet they've put them off. These hearings, frankly, are completely unnecessary. All these questions could be submitted in writing. These meetings could happen behind closed doors. But what it basically boils down to is a bunch of politicians want to get on TV, get their 7 minutes, hope to get a viral moment so that they can fundraise and maybe get on cable news TV tonight so they can get their own name ID up and maybe pick up a few extra X followers. It's completely unnecessary. We need to get these vital positions filled because the Attorney General of the United States, the Director of the FBI, they are the positions that have the ability to pull back an FBI, a weaponized DOJ, back from the brink and get it onto a correct course that is objectively good and interested in upholding the rule of law and protecting the Constitution of the United States.
Garrett, Trump famously signed an executive order. He's been talking about reinstating military people who got kicked out for the vax mandate, all that other stuff, and I applaud him for that. Question to you, I guess, Steve, everybody, have you heard anything, texts, emails, phone calls, rumors, that you and the fellas are going to get made whole in some way?
I've had some conversations with my attorneys within the last month or so that certainly it seems like a tide is turning, and it seems like perhaps there will be a little more interest in a much more rapid resolution to this preposterous amount of time that I've been hanging in limbo, but nothing concrete yet, and I'm okay with that. I've gone this long. Steve, Kyle, Marcus, we've all spent quite a large amount of time just waiting and trying to fight the good fight. I can make it a little bit longer, and I'll give the current administration a little bit of grace and a little bit benefit of a doubt there, because they're still fighting. They've been fighting subversion since Election Day, and they're going to have to continue fighting it. Cash and Pam Bondi and any of these other cabinet positions and appointees, they're going to have to fight this type of subversion for a long time. So I understand if they don't quite get to whistleblowing or us whistleblowers right off the bat. But I'm hopeful that 2025, in a large way, will be a year of vindication for all of the suspendables.
Yeah, I'm pulling for you guys. Good luck, fellas. Come back soon.
Thanks, Jess.
All right. Let's talk to Chip Roy. In fact, I want to ask Chip Roy about that, what he's heard. Let's ask him about what's going on in D.C. next. Well, spending hasn't stopped. It hasn't slowed down. And I know we're all excited right now about the way things are going. We have mass deportations. Confirmations are going through. At least we hope confirmations we like. Woohoo, things are changing. I'm happy, you're happy, everyone's happy. However, spending the country into bankruptcy is still going. And apparently the GOP intends to keep it going. Joining me now to talk about that, great congressman from the state of Texas, my friend Chip Roy. Okay, Chip, what the hell's going on?
Well, Jesse, good to be on. So here's the deal. And put it in summary form. The big tension right now among Republicans is, what do we do on the so-called reconciliation product, right? This is the package that we have to do under the Budget Control Act to reconcile tax policy and our spending policy to achieve zero deficit. Now, before you laugh, right, that's what the law requires. So we're going through that process. The upside is that you can do it with majority vote in the House and the Senate. Remind you, Democrats use this to jam through Obamacare. So we should and can use this to truly have some transformative change with respect to spending, taxes, and some policies that are embedded in those decisions, like healthcare. So here, where are we? There's been a debate about one bill versus two bill. That's kind of shiny. The reason that that debate has existed, I favor two bills, is because I want to move quickly. I want to get the border funded. I want to get defense funded properly, not through waste, but to give Hegseth what he needs to modernize the military. And then I want to get cuts to the very upfront immediate things, like, for example, the student loan fiasco, the electric vehicle mandates. And then I'm happy to give the president an increase in the debt ceiling, probably bigger than I would personally prefer, because I want to give him the room to go get his job done. Then do a second bill on taxing and spending. There is a big debate right now, and we're now focusing on one big so-called beautiful bill. Well, I'm for a big beautiful bill if it actually cuts spending. So this morning I'm told down in Florida, I didn't go there, I went to Texas to be with my family because my family needed me to be home, and I knew what would happen in Florida, which is more of the same. I'm getting updates, and I'm not going to announce them yet because this was a private meeting, but they're what you would expect, which is not really big cuts. They want to issue what's called instructions to the budget committee to have, I'm going to generally characterize, fairly low numbers of additional cuts to, quote, offset what we're going to have to outlay with respect to the tax policy. Last point, don't mean to filibuster. Republicans have been taught for forever that tax cuts pay for themselves. I broadly speaking agree with the notion if you leave money in the hands of the taxpayers, they will create wealth. I don't want taxes. I'd like to zero out the tax code. But if you're going to do that, then you at least have to do math. Because if we keep printing money, then that's a tax on our future kids, grandkids, and on our entire ability to exist because of inflation. So I'm demanding that with the tax cuts, we have spending cuts. We are getting resistance on that, and thus the conflict.
Okay, so break down a couple things for me, Chip, and you're always welcome to filibuster on this show because it explains things to us. One, why Florida? What's going on in Florida? Two, when you're talking about cuts to things like electric vehicle mandates and, you know, student loan ridiculousness, that seems like bread and butter, easy GOP layups. You're not asking them to take a hardcore pro-life position or something like that. Why is there any resistance at all? Please.
Well, I'm not yet sure where the resistance will be fully on student loans or EV mandates, but what I do know is they couldn't agree with me and some of my colleagues who all signed a letter saying we would do those things to do it quickly. My view was give the president the border funding now. Let's get these people removed. Let's get them repatriated. Let's support Tom Homan, and let's do it quickly, because the more time that goes on, they're going to have a parade of horribles. They're going to show a picture of somebody getting removed that seems sympathetic, and then we're going to have a tough time getting that money. But what's really going on down in Florida is it's a Republican retreat. That's fine. I don't know why we have to go down to a resort in Florida to do that, but fine. They go to a resort, go do that. But I knew what was going to happen, so I just made a choice to go be in Texas. But I'm in constant communication with them, and what's happening right now is they're putting forward cuts that are pretty small, but yet the tax amount is pretty significant. So what does that mean? Right now, if you look at outside entities, the Congressional Budget Office, all these other things, and I don't trust any one of them per se, they have a cost to the tax cut, right? Well, let's take child tax credit, Jesse. Nobody will tell me, and I'm asking everybody in the House of Representatives, will you tell the world that child tax credits will pay for themselves through economic growth? The answer to that is no. It's an $800 billion 10-year deduction for parents for their kids. That might be great policy, Jesse, but it's not economic productivity. So you can't go, on the other hand, say, oh, we don't need to go cut spending to pay for that. I believe you do. So that's all I'm saying. Can we just do math? And we teach our kids to do math. Just put up a big whiteboard. Let's just put up all of the taxes on one side. Let's put up all of the spending on the other side, and let's balance that. That's all I'm asking.
Okay, so can you merge these worlds for me, Chip? Because I hear the Trump administration, Trump is trying to make these big, bold moves like cutting the income tax, which obviously is music to my ears, music to everybody's ears, I suppose. But we're talking about cutting income taxes. Great, sounds good. But they don't want to cut any spending in the House. So one of those two things is never going to happen, right?
Well, so this is the actual big question. So there's a lot of pressure for good reason to make the tax cuts that were put in place in 2017 permanent. The corporate rates are already permanent, okay? Let's be very clear. And those were the big economic engine in 2017. The other rates are the ones expiring, the standard deduction, the individual rates, the child tax credits, et cetera. So everybody wants to keep their lower taxes. They don't want the taxes to go up next December. I agree. I share that view. I'm a taxpayer. I'd like to zero out my taxes. But are we going to get spending cuts? The answer is no, if some of us don't force the question when tied to the tax cuts, because the pressure for tax cuts is real high. And I'm saying, guys, I can't agree to give you your tax cuts and then expect that tomorrow you're going to deliver for me the spending cut, because they will never do it. So that's the fight we're having right now.
All right, tell me about China owning farmland here, Chip, before I let you go.
Yeah, so I introduced a bill 4 years ago to ban Chinese ownership of any land. It's particularly egregious when it's farmland, but I don't think it should just be farmland that we prohibit. I think it should be all land. Frankly, I don't think the Chi-Com should own any of our significant assets. No meatpacking plants, production facilities, certainly not land. We would never let Nazi Germany own land in America in 1939 or 1944 or after the war. So I think we should restrict it. Frankly, I might even go further and introduce a bill that says, why does any foreign national own any real estate or land in this country? I understand you want capital to flow into our nation, but I don't think I want foreigners owning dirt, even if they're supposedly our friends, but certainly not the Chi-Com. So that's what my bill would do. I've reintroduced it now for the, I think, third Congress. And I think we need to act on it. I don't think this is that hard. It's in our national security interest, and it's frankly, I think, just sensible policy.
I agree. Congressman, as always, thank you. Come back soon, please. Keep fighting. All right. We have a special tomorrow, speaking of the Chi-Coms. On the Chi-Coms, China. What's going on over there? What are we doing about it? You're going to want to catch that. Anyway, before we get to that, we have Light in the Mood next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And you know how we do things on this show. Lighten the mood after all the heavy news and immigration and spending and confirmation hearings. Lighten the mood is supposed to lift you up. You are supposed to rise. That's what Chuck Schumer wants to.
People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time in terms of trying to get this done. So, yes, I think democracy will have an effect, and we are going to keep at it. People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time in terms of trying to get this done. So, yes, I think democracy will have an effect, and we are going to keep at it.
I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.